I am tempted to do a two-parter this week.
Why?
Just so we can have a 221B.
Okay.
No? Nothing?
were you wanting me to ask more?
No. If you don't get it, you don't get it. All right, let's do this.
I do get it.
Do you?
The show.
What is it?
221.
What?
Isn't that a show?
Yeah, something like that.
Wasn't
it? All right. The podcast is afoot. Let's go.
It was a show, right?
Hello and welcome to episode 221 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is...
Adam.
Is there a delay or did you just delay?
I was just still thinking about it.
Okay. The cold open, you mean?
No, who I was.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
I was really good. Being self-reflective there for a second.
Good to know.
Okay.
Amazon, I'm going to get right in. I Amazoned this week a couple times.
Okay.
Nothing good. I feel like we're really delayed here.
No, I was drinking coffee that time.
Okay. I'm going to do a test here, and you answer. As soon as I stop talking, you answer, okay? And go.
Okay.
That's not bad. I can work with that. I bought house stuff. I bought house stuff on Amazon this week.
Okay.
The rock star stuff. I bought insulation for my pipes.
Okay.
So that you can save money on your heating bill.
Great.
You know, at the end of winter. Wait till winter's done, and then order the insulation for the pipes.
You're just getting ready. You're early for next year.
Well, it's just one of those things I just hadn't got around to, and you know, we had to live in the house and all that stuff first, and then realize, and I don't know, I how much do I know about heating and whatnot in the house?
Not much.
Because you guys have a furnace, or do you have baseboards?
We have baseboards.
So you have the electric baseboards, right?
Yeah, yes.
See, I grew up, we always had the forced air heating and the vents, so I had no idea about radiators really and how they work. I mean, we're getting way too deep. But point being, I bought that, and I bought some rare earth magnets.
Okay.
So there's that. Woohoo!
Yeah.
They're very strong, very small, very strong, and I'm going to design some sort of blackout curtains for my kids using rare earth magnets.
Okay.
Yeah. But they will be sewn into the curtains so that my kids won't actually play with them before everyone gets all up in arms about, hey, there's dangerous for kids. They won't be playing with the magnets themselves.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you cleared that up.
Point being, if you're buying stuff like that, buy it through our site on Amazon. It's a great way to go. Helps us out.
Yeah. All they got to do is click through on the Two Hosers.
Absolutely. Check it out at twohosers.com. And on the right-hand side, you can see the link for your country. And if you can't see the link for your country, well, let us know. We'll see if we can add one. What's going on, Adam?
Just got back from Portland for spring break.
Portland. Took a little Stand By Me trip.
Yeah, took a little trip down.
I ran all the way home to...
Yeah, what? Yeah. So, right. No, that was fun. So we did that. So we did some things Portland, not Seattle. I haven't actually been to Seattle for a while. The Canadian dollar is terrible these days, so probably not making as many trips south of the border as typical. But we went to Portland for a few days, and that was really fun. Got to see an NBA game. Got to see Portland Trailblazers and Golden State Warriors. That was a treat. And Golden State Warriors are the best team in basketball, if you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
In NBA, so that was a treat. And yeah, all things family, you know. Oh, we did some roller skating, like old school roller skating.
Ooh.
Which was really fun and surprising to see how... challenging it was for my kids, who are both very good skaters on ice and have rollerbladed mm-hmm. many times, but the four wheels threw them off completely, and both of them were struggling with roller skating. So that was fun.
Didn't we just talk about Stardust Roller Rink last episode?
I think we did. I think we did, yeah. or maybe two episodes ago, but we did talk about it. And so we were down in Portland at an amusement park, and part of the amusement park was this big roller rink. So it was fun because they had, like, it was a huge roller rink and, you know, disco balls and the music and all of that. So that was good fun. The kids really liked it.
And did you bring your camera for that?
For the whole trip, I just brought my my Canon T2i, like the crop sensor camera, and just the 30 mil mm-hmm. lens. So I did fire off a couple of shots in there. But again, it's all pretty snapshotty, just being with the equipment that I had. But I haven't looked at any of the photos yet. Just came back, so I'm looking forward to it.
Did you get good results? We've talked about this probably, 100 times on the show?
Yeah.
Like when you go traveling, just bring your kind of your quote-unquote throwaway camera and the 30mm lens, which the 30mm lens isn't cheap, or it wasn't cheap. I think it's cheaper now.
It's cheap now.
We have.
Yeah, yeah.
But my attitude is I've taken so many photos with it that if I'm traveling with it and I come back to the hotel and it's been stolen by the housekeeping, I'm just going to go on with my day.
Yeah, yeah. I don't worry about it. Leave it in the car or wherever. I mean, I don't leave it on the seat with the sign on it saying "Please take me," but I do leave it in the car. Whereas I tend to always take my other camera out of the car with me, even to mm-hmm. go into a store or whatnot. Even if it was in the trunk, it's one of those things. I'm like, yeah, I won't be too happy with myself if my other camera gets taken. So I'm not going to take the risk. But no, I'll leave this one in the car without batting an eyelash.
I cannot remember the last time that camera of mine was in a bag or a case of any sort.
There you go.
It just on the floor of the car, you know, in my baseball bag all the time, that kind of thing. It just gets thrown in there. So there you go. Pick one up.
And I find that, you know, if you're doing the handoff, you know, to your wife or family member to take a picture where you would like to be in it, That combo of the 30 mil lens with the crop sensor camera is mm-hmm. super easy to get a good result. Like if you preset, you know, something that's got a decent depth of field, 5-6, let's say, on a 30 mil lens, they got a lot of wiggle room there as far as focus goes. So I find that it's a lot easier
focus
to sort
and camera movement too.
And camera movement, yes. So I find it's a lot easier composition. The whole thing, it's a good happy medium for outside to hand it off, mm-hmm. and more often than not, you get the camera back and have a look, and you're happy. And even if the composition isn't perfect, you can usually crop something good too, because you've got a little extra wiggle room with that field of view.
Oh, I always find there's a lot of cropping going on. There's a lot of headroom in those shots.
Yeah, that's okay though, because it's not, if you handed them the 85 mil with that same setup, you wouldn't have mm-hmm. almost any wiggle room. So no. I like the 30 mil for that reason. And like you say, because of the wider angle, you also get a lot more depth of focus, I guess. Was that the term?
The wider depth of field,
yeah.
Acceptable focus. Acceptable. And plus, when you hand like someone who doesn't know anything about anything, you hand them that camera, that lens is pretty heavy, and you automatically achieve rock star status. Because they think, wow, this guy knows what he's doing. That's a heavy lens.
Right.
Then that's more of an internal monologue that they have. I've never had anybody say that, but I can read it in their eyes.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
that's a true story. That reminds me. Speaking of the 40D, the older version of the same thing that you're talking about, pretty much the crop sensor. Did you shoot anything interesting? Yeah, I shot with the 40D.
You did.
I'm going to answer my own question. Yeah.
Okay.
I went to a birthday party since we last spoke. We spoke 2 weeks ago-ish.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And since then, I went to a friend of ours. Their kid had his birthday party. And, you know, a whole bunch of the friend's kids came. And I knew it was going to be, it was outside. And I knew it was going to be awful light. And so normally, my go-to camera, if I wanted to bring a camera, which I kind of sort of did. I didn't really, wasn't too sold on it. But I thought, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll, you know, shoot some kids that aren't my own for once. and brought the 40D, and I thought, you know what, this light is going to be terrible. Like this, it's just going to be so uneven. So the 30mm lens can stay at home. So I brought the 85 on the 40D.
Okay.
For the birthday party, knowing full well that since it wasn't one of my kids' birthdays, I wasn't going to be in charge of documenting the event.
Right.
I could just pick up a few candid shots here and there, and that everyone would, you know, go home a winner. Right. So I posted a few of those pictures in the Dropbox there. If you want to have a look at them.
I can't wait.
Or not. It's just four different photos of our friends' kids. And you look at this, you wouldn't think, oh yeah, one of those kids is having a birthday.
Right.
But this is just a good example of what to do when there's going to be bad lighting. Is just get in close and get the kind of the fun reactions from the kids. And you see the dirt on their faces because they're out at the playground playing and eating chocolate cake and getting sand in it, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Not important to the narrative. However, these are the kind of pictures that you can get in terrible light.
I see them. They all look very good.
That's the thing. This is it's kind of a save, but if you know going in that you know, not to expect too much, don't go wide. Stay with the 85, cuz the 85 on the crop sensor, that's a really tight lens.
Mhm.
And so, you know, if you're in the house, you're in tough. But outside, you're going to get a little distance, and this is the kind of thing you can get. So that's something to think about. I probably shot all these at like an f, I don't know, 2.8 probably, just okay. Enough to, you know, hold focus across their face and get rid of the lousy background with the bad light. So nice. There you go. And there's no other lighting here. There's nothing. There's no bounce. No flash. Nothing. Because you don't have time for that kind of thing. So, once again, 85 mil, we love it.
All right.
The end. Did you shoot anything interesting?
I was going to say buy one on Amazon. Didn't we just talk about the interesting things I shot in Portland?
Did you? Well, you just said you brought the camera. I didn't.
We went to roller rink. Okay, then so yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then just stuff on rides, you know, all the typical stuff. I didn't take any pictures in the basketball game. I just... I brought the camera and then, you know, quickly realized what was I going to take a photo of. I think I took one picture of Jack, you know, during warm up. We walked right down near the court so you could sort of see the court and sort of get an idea of, okay, this is exactly where we are. So I took a photo in that situation, and that was it. That was all the photos I did there. And yeah, just family fun stuff. So.
Right. We also had a, like, I don't know what to call it, like a baseball open house kind of thing where the people kind of run our team have like an open gym for like 16 to 18 year olds to come out and see what baseball is and if they want to play it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's a bunch of people who are brand new at this, just kind of, you know, learning what a glove is. They've never had a glove on their hand before. And the big thing in Germany here, because you know what European handball is, right?
Yes.
They just call it handball here because we're in Europe. That's for real. This is called handball. It's a big sport, but you catch with the same hand that you throw in handball.
Okay.
So that's very, very abstract concept for the Germans to catch with the left hand, throw with the right hand, right?
Right.
So that's the kind of stuff that they had to do. So teach them all how to play and then how to hit and how to do all this stuff. So I had to go photograph that in the gym and make it look like baseball. Go ahead.
No, I thought you had done this before, and like you had a video of it. Like we're talking a couple of years ago.
That would be with the kids. That would be with like the school kids.
Okay, this is adults.
This was something else. Yeah, this was adults. This just happened like a few days ago. And so we shot that, and then I just basically shoot stills because they want to basically, you know, advertise this on Facebook or whatever they want to do. And so I have to try to define the narrative that, you know, new people are learning baseball in a foreign country, foreign to baseball anyways, and they're all having fun. Mm-hmm. So that was in a gymnasium. So, I mean, it wasn't a simple task because baseball in still photos, unless you're, you know, at the high level, is kind of boring photographically. Yes. It's actually kind of boring in general.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, but photographically, kind of boring. So I'm going to scratch that part. That wasn't interesting.
Okay.
That was part of it. Maybe we have to redefine what interesting means.
Yeah.
That could be it. I've posted some of those black background baseball picks that I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
In the gym that we killed the ambient. So I'll post a link to those or post some of those on the site. Have you seen them yet or no?
I think I saw one. Was there one on Facebook?
I put one on my own Facebook, yeah, or maybe on the Two Hosers. I don't remember now.
I remember seeing one photo that I think was the situation you were talking about.
Right. Yeah, I posted. I think I posted my favorite one of the bunch.
Okay.
So you probably saw that, but I'll post a couple of those so people can have a look. I know everyone's been on the edge of their seat. When's that going to happen, Alan?
Yeah. Oh,
there it is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
This week's challenge. Was last week's topic was the faux medium format.
Okay.
We got a bit of listener feedback on this.
Okay.
And evidently you didn't do a very good job explaining what it is.
I didn't?
Or me. I don't want to point fingers at him.
Okay. All right.
One of us kind of didn't do a good job. So I think we'll probably have to end up revisiting this in the future. But in the meantime, let's have a look at our photos this week. Let's see what... let's have a look at yours.
Okay.
What's going on here?
This is Jack.
The end. All right. Print it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is Jack standing near a large rock down near where we live, where the water kind of meets the Gary Point Park. And, So this was at... sunset, and the sun's really low and just off camera left, and so I'm shooting back towards the sun, so the colors get pretty washed out. I wanted this direction just because I thought it made just a very nice sort of easy, soft background that even completely out of focus I would know, you know, where I took this versus turning the other way and having him lit by the sun with the boats and Steveston in the background. I just had done a photo challenge photo like 2 weeks ago with the fisherman with that view, so I kind of wanted something different. So I went into the sun, which is why I decided to go black and white, just because the colors get pretty washed out when you shoot into the sun like this. So I went with black and white, and there you go. So I got in tight. This is 85 mil on the full frame camera, and I think this is 5 or 6 photos. So I just kind of, I wanted the sort of pano look, but shot super close and with no depth of field to, you know, let you know that there's no way I could have done this with any other way. Like, I can't see how I could have taken this photo unless I was standing 300 meters away with a lens that I don't own and completely zoomed in. I don't think I could get this field of view. So, yeah. So
and even then, you're gonna need a lot of light.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah exactly.
A lens like the lens that you're describing is going to be an f/5.6 or maybe an 8 if you put, you know, throw like an extender on there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did not. And my wife actually has a little bit of bounce going. So I don't know from this size image if you can tell, but there are catch lights in his eyes that are the big bounce reflector that I have. So you have to kind of zoom in to see them, but we've basically added some fill light on his camera left, which again shows up better in color because you can see the golden tones because I have the reflector on it. I have the gold side, so that shows up better in color. But the catch lights you can see clearly when you zoom in are the bounce board, the big reflector.
I like this photo because, I mean, I know how you did it because it was the challenge, but, you know, I might not have guessed it right away had I not known. And there's just something about it that is just, you know, it's not your normal photo.
No,
you know, it's very subtle, too.
Yeah, and I think most people would think, oh, you know, you just backed up and you shot with an 85 millimeter on an f/1.8, but you still can't get this if you back up to get this field of view.
No.
You still
get
bring
close,
it.
But you can get close, but the rock falls off. Like the rock falls off really quickly.
The rock falls off extremely quickly, and that's kind of what that's kind of the giveaway to me that it's like, oh yeah, you can't do that. Rock falls away way too fast for me to have been, you know, standing 20 feet away.
So when you said you, this is five photos, you said?
Yeah, five or six, something okay. like that. It wasn't 50, now, that's for sure. Yeah.
So is that five, like from right to left, or like how did you end up shooting this?
I basically shot him, and then I just kept shooting left. So I just basically, you know, yeah, I just kept kind of moving around, trying to keep the camera in the exact same plane that the photo of him was, so that there wasn't going to be or minimize the distortion effect. Again, in my mind, the way that the software is going to work, I wanted to basically, I just kept sort of stepping sideways.
Ah, that's a hot move. Actually physically moving, because the instinct is to pan, and then you kind of get into trouble perspective-wise.
Right.
So what do you think? What do you think besides that part? Like, what do you think of this photo and the technique, like in general?
I really like it in this photo. It's one of those things that I tried another photo and I tried to piece it together of like a more square crop, large, very similar. He's sitting on the rock and he's posed and just trying to get way more. And I think I took about, I don't know, 15 pictures. And then when I used the software to glue it together, it didn't quite work. It warped it a little bit too much. You could tell that it was something was off. And so then I was one for two in terms of trying this technique and having it turned out. It seemed like, again, and I don't know if I'm generalizing this, but the more photos that you take in this technique, the increased likelihood for error and distortion and bringing in some of these other elements. So in my experience, again, just two samples, so not a big sample size here, but I would tend to do this. If I was doing it again, I would do it again with a smaller number of photos like I did here, five, six photos, instead of trying to do 25 photos.
Right. Now, see, I went the other way. I didn't get this in only two. I shot mine today, the one that I'm my challenge photo, and because I shot many, many others throughout the last couple weeks.
Okay.
And I couldn't get it. I just couldn't get it. I mean, I think I was trying to do too much.
Okay.
I was really trying to do it. So let's have a look at my photo. And I also shot my daughter. And this is today out in some open shade out in front of our house. Nice sunny day today.
Yeah.
So of course, boom, go find some shade. Otherwise, it's gonna be awful. And so this one is actually 35 photos.
Wow.
Put together. Yeah. And this one actually worked. I gotta tip my hat to my daughter for sitting still. I couldn't believe that she would actually sit still for this.
But here's my question: Why do you need 35 photos? Like, it doesn't seem like,
because
in terms
I'm
of the area.
Than you.
But I mean, in terms of the area around her, why yes. so many photos?
Essentially, what I tried to do is I wanted to really push the limits of what this technique could do. And so what I ended up doing is I also shot with my 85 mil. You shot with your full frame camera, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I shot with my 5D Mark II, the full frame. And basically I set the lens at 1.8, f1.8, and moved in pretty much almost the minimum focal distance.
Okay.
Just to really hammer this effect. Which means that I'm only going to see like part of her face in terms of in one photo. So in terms of how many, you know, like Jack filled the frame in his photo, correct?
Yeah.
Right. So with my daughter here, her face fills the frame, but the rest of it isn't in the same shot. So that's why I needed to get in, move up and down and get all over and get 35 photos to really do it. Now, did I need to do 35? No. Not really. I mean, the effect is really enhanced because the background behind her isn't tremendously far away. That's like that's just the shrubbery and whatnot in our front yard. And it's not really that far away, like a few feet, but it blurs very quickly because I'm at f1.8 and I'm at whatever the minimal focal distance is on the 85 mil, which is actually, it's not that close. You have to get like, what is it, like 1.5 meters or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Or 1.5 feet. I don't even remember now. It's I think it's 0.85. I should check sometime. I keep checking and then never remember. It's not as close as you'd like, but Point being, I got in as close as I could and then basically snapped her face first, because that's the important part, and then quickly moved up and down and then kind of on either side of her so I can get, you know, fill in the blanks. Yeah, and that's essentially how this happened.
Okay. I like it.
I like the technique. I didn't like doing this with my kids, because obviously my son's not going to hold still.
Yeah, like,
it demands that.
It's tough. Absolutely, it's tough for as far as taking a picture of a kid.
Right. Now, my daughter being, you know, coming up on 4 years old, she understands holding still. Isn't really interested in it.
I think that if you can, here's the other side of this. If you can get one photo of your kid, like doing it as a fill the frame version of this. I mean, the way you did it, mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck reproducing this with children on a regular basis. You're just not going to. But the version that I did, where you fill the frame with the first picture, for example, then you can quite easily snap off the rest. They could even move out of the way. And then when you glue it back together, it will fill in the blank. So really, if you can take one picture, if they'll stand still long enough to do the one photo, then there's no reason why you can't, you know, fill in the blanks around them after that photo. But if you're going to get in that close, it's not going to happen.
I did push my luck. I absolutely did. And like I said, a number of times throughout the week, I actually shot different versions of this kind of thing with her and failed massively, because, you know, just she moved a little bit or whatever happened, and it just didn't work, you know. So moving forward, I'm not going to do a lot of this technique with my kid, but, you know, I'm going to see where this goes. I'm really intrigued by this. I've liked this since I stumbled across it a couple of years ago. It just gives us such a different look to the picture. So there you go. So maybe this one makes the wall. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
This week's topic. This one's your... You have a topic this week.
Home studio.
Isn't
that it?
I thought it was wrestling.
Oh, yeah. That WrestleMania is tomorrow or Sunday or already happened when we post this.
I think it already happened, didn't it?
Well, it will have already happened when you...
No, wait. You went... Are you going to WrestleMania too?
No. We went to wrestling for Jack's birthday, but that was like the local show in our area. WrestleMania, yeah. The big show of the year, is Sunday. So
right. Yeah. How did Jack like wrestling, by the way? Before we get into the home studio,
loved it. Absolutely loved it. Yeah, he's like, when can we go again? I'm like, well, they only kind of come to Vancouver like, you know, once a year maybe. So probably not for a while. Yeah.
That's not 100% accurate. I think there's some underground stuff I can get you into, but
well, we're talking about the WWE though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not Stampede. I think Stampede Wrestling, I think you can get. You can probably go and wrestle in Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah, they have all kinds of little local promotions, but no, we're sticking to the big time.
Oh, I see. Snobbery. Were you upset that you left your camera at home?
No, I was not.
Good. Made the right call. So home studio, what we've been talking about this for a while. You said you wanted to talk about building a home studio.
I think I have done this, and I think that there's a lot of our listeners out there that are either, you know, starting to do this or already have done this or thinking about doing this. So I thought it was a topic that you know, might be of interest to our listeners.
Let's hear about it. What did you have in mind when you're talking about the home studio?
Well, I think, you know, a question that's come up is sort of, you know, okay, well, where do you start? Where do you start when you build a home studio?
Have a home.
Yeah. Yeah, have a space, I think, is number one. Like the way it works for me is I don't really have that space, and so I have what I would call a portable home studio. Like I set it up. I clear things out of the way. I push some couches out of the way when it's studio time, and then I set things up. So I think first of all, you have to start with light. So whether you're going to have it as a permanent setup or whether you're going to have it as a portable setup.
No, hold on. Talk about the space first. Like when you talk about space, what would you recommend for space?
I'm not good with what the size of rooms are in feet, but I'm going to say, you know, think about the size of
Important? What's the first thing that's important?
That you have an area that's clutter-free.
I'm going to shoot you straight. I think Skype is screwing us over today.
Okay.
Did you get that impression?
No, not really.
Okay. Just for the listener, if the timing is off, we blame Skype because the timing seems weird on my end.
Okay.
Anyways, okay. So back to what you would need for a space.
Some areas where the walls are free of pictures is helpful. Some blankness. So it doesn't matter really what color your walls are, but just something that's an area that's free of stuff. So couches and shelves.
Well, let's say you own the place.
Yeah.
Let's say you own a place and you can paint whatever color you want. What color would you recommend somebody paint their wall?
For me, I don't really care because you can always use background stands and colored paper. But if you want to, you know, make use of the walls the most, I'd probably just go white. Because white yes. You can change it to gray, you can change it to you know, completely white, you can even make it dark if you would like, and probably get it a very dark gray and with the right lighting setup. So white is the easiest to work with.
I mean, when I painted my house, all the different rooms inside, that wasn't the main priority was painting backdrops, but that was kind of always in the back of my mind. Like, hey, how would this look in photos? Like, if I were to light this, how would that look for a backdrop? And so that was always kind of part of it. So I do recommend keeping at least one white wall, but throw like a darker gray on another wall or blue. Blue is nice. Whatever color you want to have. Make sure you have like a solid wall that you can use as a background.
Right.
In terms of room shape, like let's say you don't have a lot of space. Like ideally, you'd go out and get, you know, hey, you go rent a loft in Manhattan, and that's what you would do. That'd be just for your shooting. But we're not all rich guys.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of us are shooting. When you say home studio, we're really shooting in our home. So if you're going to set up a studio, what would you recommend, like the room that you pick that you're going to end up using a lot? Would you say it needs to be square? Should it be longer on one side? What do you think?
That's a good one. The square helps because, again, you can use the walls, especially if they're white, to bounce light off of. So you can get a more predictable kind of bounce angle if you do have a square-shaped room. I also like... if you have white ceilings, if those ceilings, you know, aren't too high, like if you have these huge vaulted ceilings, well, you're going to lose a lot of light if you intend to use the ceiling for any kind of bounce. So white ceiling, square walls make for very predictable use of bounce. Again, this all goes to how much money you want to invest and how much artificial light you want to use versus, you know, making use of things like bounce and ceilings and things like that allows you to do more with less, so to speak.
Okay. But now someone in your position
who
doesn't have, you know, tons of excess space, how do you get around that?
I move things. So I move couches. We have little sliders on them. I just basically slide them out of the way. It takes all of 30 seconds, and I have a spot that I move things to clear out one area in the house as the photo studio area. And I just slide the couches out of the way. Like everyone has flooring these days, right? So nobody has carpet. It's pretty easy just to take a couch and slide it out of the way, and then then I've got my studio space.
Is your wife tired of that yet?
No, she doesn't mind. Okay. As long as I put things back. Like, I'm pretty good about it. As soon as I finish with photo time, then I put everything back. But like I say, I've got it down to a science now that it really isn't that big of a deal. Versus the cost of upping our mortgage to have a house that would actually have a dedicated studio, I think she likes this version better.
I tend to agree. Other thing I would note, if you're going to paint the walls white and you're going to hang pictures on there, make sure they come off quickly, because you're going to do it often.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do also have that down to a science as well. Which photos need to come off. And I mean, yes. in a pinch, I can always Photoshop out a picture, but I don't want to do that. That's extra work that is more time consuming than I'd like it to be. So I prefer the getting it right in camera. And you know, like if you set up a paper roll, you also got to think about where does that paper roll end and how wide a shot that you're going to take. You still might, even using paper, might want a wider view, and so then you end up Photoshopping it if you've got a picture or something that shows in behind the paper.
Right, so that's interesting. So let's say you don't really have a good background in your living room or wherever your studio is going to be. What did you do about that?
I got a background kit. So background I think you have one now. It's basically like essentially two light stands with a crossbar, and then you get, you know, different colored paper rolls that you can hang from it, and then that becomes your background.
I'm still trying to find a decent way. I don't even have a roll of paper for mine yet. It's been, 4 months probably.
Okay.
And I'm having trouble finding the right white roll. I mean, it hasn't been a priority for me. I would like it because I would shoot with it all the time.
I think Savage makes the best paper. They seem to be everywhere, and they have a super white that's quite nice. I think that's the one that I've been using. Yeah, they're super white because they have another kind of little darker white, and then they have the super white.
However, they are rebranded here in Germany. I don't think you can actually buy Savage. It's called something else, and it's a whole mission that we're not going to bother getting into. But okay, so now you have your background set, whether it's your wall, whether it's your paper roll. What do we do for lighting? Is it just going to come into the window?
It can, but good luck on that. Especially if you're trying to really light that paper as well, you're going to need a lot of light. So I started with speed lights, so flashes. So again, one, two, three. I think if you're going to try to do the studio setup, I'm going to say that you're going to need at least two speed lights to start. If you try to do it with one, you can get some, but you're going to have trouble lighting a background. You might be able to light your subject and do more than you could without that speed light for sure. But if you're going to really want to do a studio setup, I'm going to say, at least two speed lights, and then probably something in the way of a reflector so that you can, get a rim light, and so that you can, create a fill from your main light. So I have much more than that now. I have probably, I don't know, four or five speed lights and then a studio light. But and then I have the continuous lighting for softbox. So I have all kinds of things, but let's just say you start with two main lights.
I will agree with you 99% of that and say that you're very quickly you're going to want at least two lights. Do yourself a favor and start with one, just so you know what you're doing, because wow, does it get confusing. You start mashing buttons. However, do what Adam says. Look down the line and figure on getting two. So when you go to buy them, buy two right out of the gate. Put one in a drawer.
Sure.
Go ahead, shoot with one until you're very comfortable with what it does, with the power settings, the zoom settings, and all the different things that you can do. And then go back in that drawer in a week or two and pull that one out. And now you're going to have at least two lights going. I did the same as you. I mean, very similar. I bought an on-camera flash. That's what I always recommend, is that you have at least one flash that will work on your camera in ETTL mode, because you're going to need to run around and just fire it off the wall sometimes.
Yeah.
But after that, you don't need to have every other of your strobes. Don't have to be a dedicated Canon flash, for example.
Right.
So what did you do when you added flashes to your kit? What did you look for?
I just looked for flashes. Like, I read reviews and looked for flashes that were reliable and that would be easy to sync up with wireless triggers. So I ended up with a Nikon flash that you had recommended as a secondary flash, and it has a PC sync port on it, which for those of you who don't know, you can look up what that is. But it's a way to a quick way that you can use almost any wireless trigger with a little wire to plug it in to sync to your flash to your camera. So
that's the Nikon SB28 that we have.
Yeah, that's what we have, and it's a full manual flash, so you can adjust the power settings up to whatever 1/64th power and all the way back down to full power. So it's got quite a range on it. Very versatile flash. That one's great. You can pick them up usually somewhere between, I don't know, now probably $75 and $100, something like that, used. So
unfortunately, they were probably around $40 for a while, and then Strobus got very popular, and all of a sudden the price went up. But still, comparatively speaking, if you're going to, you know, go buy the Canon 600 EX, you know, what is that going to cost? $600 or something like that.
Yeah, something crazy like that. And then there's also now a lot of users, I've never used them, but a lot of users are saying good things about the Yong Nuo flashes. So I don't know all the numbers, the specific lines, because I've never used them, but Yong Nuo has some inexpensive flashes that work quite nicely with this kind of setup. So that's the other thing. You're going to need some way to trigger flashes. So you'll need not only flashes, but you'll need a wireless triggering setup. So I know you use Paul Buff stuff.
Oh, hang on a second. The main issue when you're shooting in the studio is you don't want to have the flash on the camera.
Right.
So if your flash is in your hot shoe, you don't need any remotes of any kind. Like it'll trigger based on that connection. You want to get that flash off the camera. Now, the most popular way, and probably the number one way I would recommend for versatility, is to get a wireless. You don't have to. You can get a pretty cheap wire nowadays that is just simply going to trip the flash. So if you're shooting only in the studio, that might be something to look for, is just to get one of those simple wires that you're going to run out, you know, just to the flash itself, and that's really simple. But
now, how does that work if you're trying to trip two flashes? The other one goes optically? Like you just trip one by wire, then the second one goes optically?
If it has an optical trigger built in, which none of mine do.
Okay, so then how would you do it for two in that method?
I don't know. I'm assuming there's a splitter of some sort. I never got into that.
Okay.
I honestly don't know either. I do have a sync cable that does a decent job for one, but I use it for like a run and gun because it still has ETTL. So I never ever use it in my home studio. I always use I have the Paul Buff Alien Bees, and the only reason I have those instead of the Yong Nuos is that I bought them before the Yong Nuos came out. I think having played around with yours, this 622, I think you have.
Yeah.
Having played around with those, if I was starting fresh today, I would not hesitate to buy those. I like them.
It's a good buy. They're a good buy for sure. And they do ETTL. They have them for Canon and for Nikon. So I highly recommend those. They're going to set you back for a pair because one goes on the camera, one goes on the flash. A little over $100. So they're and that's for the pair. So you try to buy, you know, Pocket Wizards, you're going to pay $200 per trigger. So it gets expensive pretty quick if you're looking to buy a set of four, which is one for the camera and then, you know, for three different lights. And eventually, if you like doing studio stuff, you're going to wind up with three lights. So we're sort of saying that you're going to get to two real quick because that's kind of the minimum for this sort of thing. But once you know how to work two, I'm pretty sure you're going to buy a third because, again, it just opens more doors as far as, you know, different lighting setups that you can achieve.
It is rare that I use two flashes.
Yeah.
Like I there's sometimes but more often like it's either one or three.
I agree. And one almost always one or three, yeah.
Yeah. One because I'm lazy and or my, you know, I have a 60-second window here to just get a photo, so boom, out it comes. Okay, so now what do we have? We got lights.
We got lights, we got ways to trigger them. Yeah, we got triggers. Yeah. You need things to mount the lights on, so you can position them in different places. So you need light stands.
You need light stands. Now, what are those going to run you?
From the very basic, probably $25 a light stand up to, you know, you can spend easily $150 on a light stand. So I think both of us have kind of, you know, like, in the middle, we have like, I don't know, $50-$60 light stands. Like you've got those Manfrotto ones, and they're light, they're portable, they're not air cushioned. That's the where you're going to spend more money, probably closer to $100 for a decent air cushioned light stand. but they are very easy and portable. So I think what do we have, the 5001B or something like that?
That sounds familiar now that you say it. I actually have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's the Manfrotto 5001B. It's about $50. It's very light, and I have a couple of them.
Very portable, very durable. I like them so much, I actually have two sets. I used to fly back and forth to North America with them and just decided I no longer wanted to fly with them. And so I just bought a second set to have here or in Canada. I forget which the second set is. Now I just fly to them and use them there because they're great. I can't recommend them enough.
So the light stands are good. Now, the downside of those light stands are they are very light and therefore also tippy if children are running around. So then you need a basically, some way to secure them down, sandbags. We had an episode in the past about sandbags. So even in the studio, like if I'm working around kids, I will put the sandbags down on the light stands because I don't want to see my flashes go toppling over onto the hard floor.
Right. Neither do I.
So there you, and you've talked about this in weddings and stuff. If you're setting up your stands around lots of moving people, just a good idea to weight them down. So even if you had a more secure light stand, I would still probably throw a weight on it if I expected lots of people to be running around near my flash.
So now we have something to hold it. Now, how does the flash sit on the light stand?
Okay, so there's a mount. So I use, basically a standard sort of light stand umbrella mount, which, gives it a cold shoe to hold the flash, and then it allows you to put in light modifiers, which we haven't yet talked about.
Okay, what would you recommend for someone starting out? Because that's where I think we're going with this. How to build your very first studio. What do you recommend for a light modifier?
As far as the little mount, we didn't really say cost wise, but those are usually $15 to $25, and you can find those on Amazon really easily. So just look up what would it be?
Umbrella mount.
Yeah, a swivel mount, umbrella swivel mount, something along those lines. Okay, so now to
my feeling on that, my experience on those is that if you spend $25, you get a $35 mount. If you spend $15, you get a $5 mount.
Yeah, I agree. It's better to spend a little bit more. I've gone through several of the cheap ones, and then I just started buying the more expensive ones.
And then stopped buying the more expensive ones.
Exactly. So I haven't bought one for a while. So I agree with your assessment there. And then, so now we need a starting light modifiers. So the cheapest
light modifier. Why do we need what's wrong with the flash as it is?
Well, flash is fine as a rim light, like a hard flash, but it's very hard light. And in the studio, I think part of why you're doing this is you want to create that sort of, soft model like light, the kind of light that you could only reproduce with perfect sort of window light. So if you want to be able to reproduce this all the time, you're going to need a way to soften that harsh light coming from your flash.
When you say soften, how do we make it softer?
Okay, well, the easiest way is an umbrella. So an umbrella, you're now...
So bigger. We make the small light source bigger.
Bigger, and we're passing it through essentially like a translucent white material, which will also serve to soften it.
Gotcha.
So those are relatively cheap, and you can get them in different sizes, and you can get white ones, you can get silver ones, you can get all different kinds of umbrellas, but you don't expect to pay very much for those, and they are a very, very good starting point for studio lights. So $25, $30, something in that range is all you really need to spend. Now, there are big, fancy ones that you can spend $50 or $60 on, but I recommend just start with a shoot-through, which is just one of the translucent white ones, and then maybe a silver one, and then you have an ability to bounce, and then you've got also the ability to shoot through. Some of them have like a black cover that you can put over them, and then they'll do both. They'll do bounce, or they'll do shoot-through. So those are nice, too, and you'll pay a little bit more for those, but not much more.
You'll pay a lot more for those in the long run when you're taking them off and putting it on and taking it off and putting it on. That's where I find the rub.
Yeah.
I bought those. I had a pair of those. One of them actually broke just from overuse and just wore out. But I hate that thing. I can't stay. I wouldn't – moving forward, if I buy any more umbrellas, I will buy dedicated silver umbrella and a dedicated shoot-through just because I can't stand – taking that thing off.
Well, there you go. There's good feedback for the startup person.
There you go. Other than that, what do you recommend for this to complete the studio?
I think that's... Have we covered it all? I think that's it.
I think, generally, photographically speaking, I think you nailed it. That's exactly where to start. Tripod is nice, not necessary. We're assuming you have a camera. You know, what kind of a lens do we recommend? Well, whatever lens you have right now, just keep that lens. You don't need anything in particular. Obviously, you want to get some of the lenses that we've always talked about, like at the beginning of the show, like the 85mm or something like that. But... even if you have the kit lens, don't worry about it. Get the home studio set up. I would recommend a couple things that I do recommend is when you start to shoot in around your home studio, start to remember where you put the lights. Like you're going to start putting your lights in the same place an awful lot. Not exactly the same every time, but there'll be a certain kind of a base setup that you're going to put. And you're going to remember that, oh, I put that light there at 1/16th power. And you're just going to do that automatically when you set up next time. And maybe you'll change it, but that's a good starting point.
Right.
Just to be quick. I also recommend have a bunch of old sheets around that you can hang up for backgrounds or kind of muss up for you know, maybe even tighter shots like that. Or if you, you know, maybe you're shooting a newborn baby or something like that. Those make a really simple backdrop. And then the last thing I would recommend is try to get yourself a photogenic chair. Like just something simple, like a simple wood chair that you can use if you're going to have people sitting for portraits.
Yeah, I have a stool that I got from, you know, Canadian Tire for, I don't know, $10 or $12. That's just a silver little folding stool, and it's perfect for kids because it's low and it disappears in a photo. You don't even see it 9 times out of 10. And if you do see it, there's nothing really to it. It's not distracting in any way. So I agree with you. Like if you can get a nice little wooden chair, something that adds accent, if not, get something that completely disappears in a photo. And so, you know, a little stool that's got no back or arms or anything like it that they just kind of sit on is perfect. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, or if it's going to be included in the shot, get like an old apple crate or something that kind of has character to it that you can flip up on one end. A kid can sit on it. It can be part of the photo, and it's going to look pretty cool in the photo without distracting. That's the key. You don't want to distract.
Exactly.
That's it. I think that's where I would start for the home studio. That and you're off now. Just, you know, hang your shingle up and get some work. That's the next step, really.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. Awesome. And then, of course, over time, you'll build up into the massive amount of gear that Adam has and I have, and hopefully get a big studio light.
That's right.
I'm still jealous of that. I kind of want one. I really want one of those.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But not yet. Maybe this summer. Next week's challenge. Do you have something in mind?
I did, but then we already talked about it.
Oh, what was that?
Hand it off.
I don't know what that means. I didn't really read your email.
Like, hand your camera off, hand it off.
Yeah. Huh.
No?
Then hand it to somebody else to take a photo of you?
Yeah.
I'll do it. If that's what you want to go with, I have that, no. Or I have something else in mind, but...
Okay, let me hear what you've got. Decide. Let me hear what you've got.
Well, mine's very simple. Activity, because it's springtime. People are outside doing stuff. Activity is the new one.
Okay, let's do that.
Hand your camera off for activity. That's what we're doing here. Activity. Shoot some activity stuff.
Let's do it. Let's do activity. Whether you hand it off or not is up to you.
I'm not gonna. great activity websites. Adam, where can people find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca and Two Hosers Facebook.
Great. And check my stuff out at AlanAtridge.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com, where you can find everything you want to know about all the stuff we just talked about. That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.